Pope Benedict has added his voice to those calling for greater protection of our planet and respect for the environment. The Pope's appeal came in a telegram signed in his name and sent to participants in a conference on climate change held last week at the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. In it, the Pope urges everyone to adopt a way of living, models of production and consumption marked by respect for creation and the need for sustainable development of peoples, keeping in mind the universal distribution of goods. The conference in the Vatican came in the wake of two reports issued earlier this year by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, which warns that the Earth has already warmed considerably and that mankind is almost certainly to blame. My colleague Susie Hodges takes a closer look.
A greener Catholic Church. That's how some observers are describing the significance of an unprecedented conference on climate change held in the Vatican to discuss the implications of global warming and development. Some 80 scientists, environment ministers, and representatives of various religions attended the two-day meeting in the Vatican. Among the participants was David Miliband, British Secretary of State for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. He spoke to us about the importance of the Church's participation in this area.
Well, I think that the first thing to say is obviously the interest of the Vatican in these issues of climate change is very significant. The message that the Pope has sent to this seminar, I think, is important. From my point of view, the responsibilities for tackling climate change do rest with government. They also rest with business, but they also rest with civil society. And obviously, the Catholic Church, with over a billion followers around the world, has got a very important role in education and in calls to action.
Were you surprised that the Vatican decided to call a conference on climate change, and what message did it send to you?
Well, this is the first conference that the Vatican have held on climate change, and I think that is very significant. So the first message it sent to me was that this issue was rising up the agenda in a very positive way. I think that, secondly, it said to me that there was a real determination to turn thought into action. I think that's important as well.
When it comes to the moral and ethical issues here, what do you think are the most pressing ones?
Well, I think that there are profound issues of social justice, about the balance of responsibility between the richer countries and the poorer countries, and the burden that the richer countries need to take on. Secondly, there are issues of responsibility between generations as well as between countries, because obviously this is a long-term problem, not just a short-term problem. And thirdly, there are issues of internationalism, because this is a quintessentially international issue that requires local action but also requires global action.
Another participant at the Vatican conference was Bishop Christopher Tuohy of Forbes in Australia, who told me why the Church has such an important voice in the ongoing debate over climate change.
The Church has a wonderful spiritual and theological tradition to bring to the debate, and so it needs to be very considered about how it addresses that debate with the tradition behind it. And we need to respect the fact that we're not scientists. Very few people walking the streets of cities and farms around the world are scientists, actually. Most of us are human beings trying to eke out a living in this place, and we can't guarantee that life here or anywhere else. And so we have to have that spiritual base for everything we do, and that's where the Church can speak. And I think to provide that inspiration, that motivation, that love, not only for life itself, which we've been given as a gift from God, but for the earth and all the creation, the beautiful things around us, to genuinely love those things and care for them, I think the Church has a voice. And in many ways, it's probably one of the few voices that can actually speak from that tradition. We have great saints who've articulated these things over centuries, and the Divine Master himself even used the parables of nature to describe the mysteries of God.
Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool in England was another leading churchman attending the conference in the Vatican. In the face of mounting evidence that our planet's climate is changing, he told me that we need to rise to the challenge of an ecological conversion, as outlined by the late Pope John Paul II.
I think the message is exactly as given a long time ago by John Paul II and Pope Benedict. This is an issue none of us can escape from. It affects us all, especially the poorest of the poor, and therefore a church committed to the poor must clearly be involved in this.
When it comes down to the local diocesan level, do you find that the faithful are increasingly conscious about this and are taking active steps? Would they like to see the church, for instance, doing more?
Indeed, that they are very clear that this is an issue that affects everybody, especially young people. It's one of the first things they speak about. I think the problem now is how great are the steps we're going to have to take. I always think on these occasions of Cardinal Hume when he said, if things must change, I must change. I think the challenge we face now is this change in me could be so great, they can only be done in the power of the Spirit, and that's where you come to the meaning of what is called the ecological conversion. It's nothing less than that.
And one of the ways in which we as individuals can help arrest or mitigate the effects of climate change is to modify our lifestyle, as Archbishop Kelly went on to explain.
It can be summed up in the campaign that CAFOD is leading at the present time, live more simply so that others may simply live. It's all summed up in that. And it's not on every level. It's in terms of what we expect in terms of variety of food, how much heating do we expect in our homes, are we willing to wear an extra coat, how fast do we expect to drive our cars. Even that can begin already. By driving more slowly, you lose less of the natural resources. It is a very big change, touching every aspect of life.
And, of course, it's also the case that the poorer countries are the ones that are going to lose out, aren't they, going to suffer the most catastrophic effects?
They are indeed, especially when you think of low-lying countries. We've been reminded this morning of a place like Bangladesh, where countless millions live below sea level. That is a very serious issue.
Given that poorer nations, like Bangladesh, will be among those worst hit by the effects of global warming, Miliband says it is up to the richer nations to lead the way in trying to tackle this problem.
There's certainly a responsibility on richer countries to take a lead, and there are three parts of that, really. One is to get our own houses in order, to reduce our own carbon emissions. Secondly, in respect of countries like China and India, the fast-emerging countries, it's less of an... There isn't an issue of sort of aid programmes. That's not the issue in respect of those programmes, because it's private sector investment that's going into those countries. But through mechanisms like something called the Clean Development Mechanism, which is part of the Kyoto Protocol, there is private sector money going into low-carbon energy infrastructure in places like China, which I think is a good thing. But thirdly, in respect to the poorest countries in the world, notably in Africa, it's very, very important that our aid programmes do take sustainable development to the heart of their work. And that's certainly something, if you look at the Department for International Development in the UK, the white paper that we published last year had a very significant strand of thinking about our climate responsibilities, and that's for adaptation.
But isn't there a risk that all this talk at a higher level about the dangers of climate change won't get translated into concrete action down at the grassroots level? Miliband again.
Well, you're absolutely right to say this is about action, not just talk, but talk has to often precede action. But what I'm pleased about is that certainly in my own country, which I know best, there is real evidence of faith communities becoming fully engaged in this issue. And what I know is that they are encouraging, through their guidance and through their literature, individual churches and faith communities to take action, both at an institutional level, locally, collective level, if you like, but also for parishioners to take individual action in terms of their own lifestyle. And that seems to me to be wholly right, because there are a lot of ways in which we can take quite straightforward steps in respect of our home heating, our transport, our electricity supply, our waste, to reduce the impact that we have on the planet. And I think that mobilising role of faith communities is very important.
For a long time over the past decade, debates raged among scientists and governments as to whether or not climate change was actually happening and whether it was man-made. Miliband says the recent reports issued by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, show that the time for such debate is now past, and there's an unusual degree of unity among the scientific community about the threat facing our planet. And it's up to us, he says, to make up for this lost time.
For me, the IPCC is a formidable consensus of over 2,000 scientists from around the world using words that scientists very rarely use, words like very high confidence, words like near certainty. That is a very, very significant development. I believe there is a scientific consensus, both that climate change is here and that it's man-made.
We wasted a lot of time, though, didn't we, waking up to this?
I think that it's certainly the case that the global consensus is still being built when we'd be in a better position if it had already been built. And you can see that from the fact that the Kyoto Protocol itself didn't involve all countries of the world. And so in that sense, the way I put it is we've got to make up for lost time. And that's a vital thing that we do with real urgency and real zeal.
And my thanks there to Susie Hodges for that report on the Conference on Climate Change organised by the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace.